You frozen? Asked Eli. Stiff as a board. Let's freeze a few, Eli said. Let's have our first war, us against them. They grinned. Then Anders said, Better invite Bernard. Eli cocked an eyebrow. Oh? And Shen. That little butt wiggler? Ender decided that Eli was joking. Eli grinned. Let's go get Bernard and Shen and freeze these bugger lovers. In 20 minutes, everyone in the room was frozen except Ender, Bernard, Shen, and Eli. The four of them sat there whooping and laughing until Dap came in. I see you've learned how to use your equipment, he said. Then he did something to a control he held in his hand. Everybody drifted slowly toward the wall he was standing on. He went among the frozen boys, touching them and thawing their suits. There was a tumult of complaint that it wasn't fair how Bernard and Eli had shot them all when they weren't ready. Well, why weren't you ready? Asked Dap. You had your suits just as long as they did. You had just as many minutes flapping around like drunken ducks. Stop moaning and we'll begin. Ender noticed that it was assumed that Bernard and Eli were the leaders of the battle. Well, that was fine. Bernard knew that Ender and Eli had learned to use the guns together, and Ender and Eli were friends. Now others might believe that Ender had joined his group, but it wasn't so. Ender had joined a new group, Eli's group. Bernard had joined it too. It wasn't obvious to everyone. Bernard still blustered and sent his cronies on errands, but Eli now moved freely through the whole room. And when Bernard was crazy, Eli could joke a little and calm him down. When it came time to choose their launch leader, Eli was the almost unanimous choice. Bernard sulked for a few days, and then he was fine, and everyone settled into the new pattern. The launch was no longer divided into Bernard's in-group and Ender's outcasts. Eli was the bridge. Ender sat on his bed with his desk on his knees. It was private study time, and Ender was doing free play. It was a shifting, crazy kind of game in which the school computer kept bringing up new things, building a maze that you could explore. You could go back to events that you liked for a while. If you left one alone too long, it disappeared and something else took its place. Sometimes there were funny things, sometimes exciting ones, and he had to be quick to stay alive. He had lots of deaths, but that was okay. Games were like that. You died a lot until you got the hang of it. His figure on the screen had started out as a little boy. For a while, it had changed into a bear. Now it was a large mouse with long and delicate hands. He ran his figure under a lot of large items of furniture depicted on the screen. He had played with the cat a lot, but now it was boring, too easy to dodge. He knew all the furniture. Not through the mouse hole this time, he told himself. I'm sick of the giant. It's a dumb game and I can't ever win. Whatever I choose is wrong. But he went through the mouse hole anyway and over the small bridge in the garden. He avoided the ducks and the dive-bombing mosquitoes. He had tried playing with them, but they were too easy, and if he played with the ducks too long, he turned into a fish, which he didn't like. Being a fish reminded him too much of being frozen in the battle room, his whole body rigid, waiting for the practice to end, so Dap would thaw him. So, as usual, he found himself going up the rolling hills. The landslides began. At first, he had got caught again and again, crushed in an exaggerated blot of gore oozing out from under a rock pile. Now, though, he had mastered the skill of running up the slopes at an angle to avoid the crush, always seeking higher ground. And, as always, the landslides finally stopped being jumbles of rock. The face of the hill broke open, and instead of shale, it was white bread, puffy, rising like dough as the crust broke away and fell. It was soft and spongy. His figure moved more slowly, and when he jumped down off the bread, he was standing on a table. Giant loaf of bread behind him, giant stick of butter beside him, and the giant himself leaning his chin in his hands, looking at him. Ender's figure was about as tall as the giant's head from chin to brow.
"I think I'll bite your head off," said the giant, as he always did.
This time, instead of running away or standing there, Ender walked his figure up to the giant's face and kicked him in the chin. The giant stuck out his tongue, and Ender fell to the ground.
"How about a guessing game?" asked the giant.
So it didn't make any difference. The giant only played the guessing game, stupid computer, millions of possible scenarios in its memory, and the giant could only play one stupid game. The giant, as always, set two huge shot glasses, as tall as Ender's knees, on the table in front of him. As always, the two were filled with different liquids. The computer was good enough that the liquids had never repeated, not that he could remember. This time the one had a thick, creamy-looking liquid, the other hissed and foamed.
"One is poison and one is not," said the giant. "Guess right, and I'll take you into fairyland."
Guessing meant sticking his head into one of the glasses to drink. He never guessed right. Sometimes his head was dissolved. Sometimes he caught on fire. Sometimes he fell in and drowned. Sometimes he fell out, turned green, and rotted away. It was always ghastly, and the giant always laughed. Ender knew that whatever he chose, he would die. The game was rigged. On the first death, his figure would reappear on the giant's table to play again. On the second death, he'd come back to the landslides. Then to the garden bridge, then to the mouse hole, and then, if he still went back to the giant and played again and died again, his desk would go dark. Free Play Over would march around the desk, and Ender would lie back on his bed and tremble until he could finally go to sleep.